Does, I'd like to ask all your fellows, does Central Asia, or do Central Asia and the Caucasus exist as units that are worth discussing as such? Or should we get rid of this casually geographical term and just deal as one of you suggested with 8 or 10 countries?
Well,
and which way are we moving? Toward the existence of a Central Asia and the Caucasus, or away?
If you can ask me that question.
Yes. Not as a
single unit. Can we wait 1 or 2 years and see what happens with the EU? Because timing is important. Now we are in the crossing, Kreuzung plane. We don't know how to move further. We kind of joined one club, but then we don't know what the club members want to do. And if you watch, there are already internal disbalances between Russia, Kazakhstan, Russia. So we are not there yet. So it's a little bit early and maybe a little bit dangerous to do the forecast, because we don't know what will come out of this club. Give us a year or two. The future potential will shape up, and then at least from my side, I will be more sure whether we need to discuss Caucasus and Central Asia as a sovereign state, sovereign region, or we have to discuss it as part of the bigger clubs.
I think the most important first is the keep of current status quo within the Central Asian Caucasus. Any bad peace much better than good war. So the next important is keeping stability. The second is, in the case of success economic project, including energy partnership with the European Union, including Trans-Caspian, of course we will be diverse involved on these different pipelines, plus transport communication. Of course there are many differences, but I think our common approach to the wine, vodka, and to beautiful ladies, I think is commonalities. But let's see. The most important to keep state sovereignty and try to develop solely Vedo.
I wish that Central Asia, well, first of all, I wish Mongolia was considered part of Central Asia. A lot of times when people talk about Central Asia, Mongolia is not considered as one thing. But I would wish that the collaboration is certainly a lot more. In Mongolia, we have our main foreign kind of policy, it's called the third neighbor policy. Of course, we only have two neighbors, Russia and China, but we try to have as good of a diplomatic and commercial relationship with any other country besides Russia and China. And for that, the U.S. is a major player, the EU, Japan, South Korea. But at the same time, logically, if we look at history and culture, we have lots of similarities with the Central Asian countries. So, if there's a stronger bond between the nations, and if we can really find the common ground for us to really work together, for at least Mongolia, that would be extremely beneficial.
Any of the other? Yes.
I have a question from Badur and Matuga from Mongolia fellows. So you already mentioned that it would be nice to be part of the Central Asian region, but at the same time, is there any discourse in Mongolia? Are there any plans? So what kind of information you're aware of? And is it growing or decreasing? So what are the tendencies? Thank you.
Unfortunately, I would say that there's really not much discourse in Mongolia about the Central Asian nations. As I mentioned in the beginning, I really don't have, for example, personally, many kind of friends or relationships or connections with people in Central Asian countries. Mongolia, there's, I would say, an issue that Mongolians have is that we still believe that we're living 800 years ago in many ways, that we're still the greatest, you know, nation, empire in the world, and we only deal with the major powers. So when we think about our third neighbors, we're thinking that you know, U.S. or big, we don't care about the smaller. So I think in many ways, in this kind of thought process, Central Asian countries kind of are secondary to a lot of countries, which I think is very unfortunate and wrong. And I certainly do think that we should be shifting our attention to the Central Asian region to really look for possible ways for especially commercial collaboration.
Let me try another way of getting at this question. I won't give up. There was a very great American political scientist, German origin, named Karl Deutsch. Yes. And he came up with a very clever idea. He back in the 50s, someone asked him, well, is there what's the future of America and Europe? Are these just totally two totally different realms or not? And rather than, you know, doing the usual blather that academics do, he said, well, let's check on it. And he counted the number of first-class letters, sort of emails, if you will, going back and forth between these, and he charted it over time. His conclusion was, on the basis of telephone calls, telegrams, first-class letters, that in fact what was happening is that the basis for political community was his term at the North Atlantic level. He was dead right, of course, it turned out to be. Now, what I want to know is if you do that kind of test, not generally, but just your own experience, what's happened? Is it going toward some intra-regional thing, or are you rather being pulled out to external great powers, whoever they may be? I'd like each of you just very quick on this, and then plus you all. What's your experience?
I think we're doing poorly on that. I don't think there's much in terms of the connection.
Yeah, I also have to agree. If you look in the Caucasus, we have three countries there, all three going to totally different directions. So what it tells you already, unfortunately.
There's no Caucasus.
Yeah, maybe nationality and food. But then if you ask that in 5 years and we're really far from that status quo, really toward Russia, toward West, and toward Turkey.
And which way is it moving?
I think we all move to all three directions. I think Azerbaijan will try to get their act together with Turkey because of energy resources and common thinking and religion and everything. Armenia will follow Russia, I think. And Georgia will try to get hooked with Europe, and then we'll see what happens out of it.
And intra-communication not growing.
Maybe with Georgia. I see more potential with Georgia, and then hopefully, because there are people in Armenia that don't want to go to Russia. I mean, for us, these values are more common. So
are there some Georgians who will comment on this quickly here? There are several. Yes, please, introduce yourself.
Thank you so much for this opportunity to be here in the floor of this garden. I'm here in the... I'm reminding the famous Admiral James Hartog's words, that who I am and what I'm doing here right now. And this is a great opportunity for me, really, and for ourselves, that we are the Vanfield Fellows and have a chance to get better this, what we learned during these 6 weeks. And as you know, that we've signed the association agreement with Europe last year, and this is the biggest achievement of our country. But I don't think that it's rising problems with our friends and our neighboring countries, especially with Azerbaijan and Armenia. On this regard, at least in the starting point, if we analyze the economic situation. Why we decided to join the European Union, that Zara and our colleagues already mentioned that, you know, there is a nonsense to join the club which is giving you limited, I don't know, competition. There is no, how to say, values to is uniting you someone, you know. We know that we have a lot of problems inside of our country to building the modern state in the 21st century, but we still believe that the future of our country is together with the European Union and NATO integration. Maybe it's like an exaggerated hope, but we still live with hope, you know, and we don't see any other way in any other like alliance. And in this regard, if the like Georgia has a very good relations with the Turkey, with the like Armenia as well, with Azerbaijan, and there is some discussions that Georgia can become the like a hub of the for the Central Asia or like Middle East countries to be somewhere like a you know place where you can start a business, because as you know like in 2012 there was like a Euro Observer survey and fighting with the corruption, our country is one of the successful on this regard, and business like environment is a very low taxes and you know, very attractive place to really
do
business on this
area. Thank you. I want to hear now from the rest of you very quickly. Which way are we going?
Well, there is several lessons which is could be. The first, I'm regularly visiting Kazakhstan and Kyrgyzstan, other countries, Russia, sometimes with lecture visit. Lesson number one is in Central Asia, you can rely only on yourself. No one could guarantee your security. That's lesson number one. And second is, post Kazakhstan, Uzbekistan, Iraq, last foreign policy strategy announced, Central Asia is the highest priority.
Yeah.
That's a good signal, because we understand all security challenges is transnational, and all security challenges interconnected.
And the emails, numbers, are they flowing or not?
Yes, of course. We are actually in different networks of publication, journals. We initiated a couple of publications in Germany. I'm one of the editors of this book, and it's together with all Central Asian countries.
For Kyrgyz Republic, there is definitely Central Asia as a region, because if you look the numbers in tourism, last year we had around 4 million tourists from CIS countries. That means if you exclude Russia, it's going to be around 2.5 million people from Central Asian countries visiting Kyrgyz Republic for our lake, which is Issyk-Kul Lake, and it's a great integration. Secondly, we have American University in Central Asia, which is in Bishkek, and if you go there, you will see the Central Asia like very, it's demonstrated very, I mean, you will see the cooperation, you will see the youth and people.
So you think it's going up?
Yeah, it's going up.
Some other views?
Down here.
I just would like to briefly echo what Batun
just
said.
Introduce yourself.
I'm Tukshin from Mongolia. One of the interesting things is that, Mongolia, as Batun said, we are very much closely starting to integrate with Northeast Asia. The reason is that through the economical, there is much more economic opportunities, much more, much bigger market for us there. And, my hope is that as the other Central Asian and Caucasian countries will start to prosper, our economy will start developing, we will definitely see more, much more linkage, definitely. Another interesting thing is that, I never really thought this would be the case, but because Turkish Airlines actually on the way between Ulan Bator and Istanbul, they make a stop at Bishkek. And simply because of that reason, actually, we start to see Kyrgyz apples actually becoming more popular in Mongolia. So, you know, there's definitely so much opportunity, so much, you know, hope there. And I think, you know, as our conference will start, you know, more
developed. Thank you very much, yes.
More interesting.
Thank you very much. I'm Umit from Kazakhstan. I think the Kazakhstan is not going anywhere. It's already arrived where it want to be. Because our president in 1994 declared that we want to this Eurasian Union. And all our policies about inner integration. Because our closest allies is our neighbors. That's why we want to, our president proposed to make a bigger market so that we could live under one roof. Thank you.
There's one.
very shortly, I'm also an optimist. There are a lot of, it makes a lot of economic sense for sure. And the values are very similar. We all have many, many common friends in each country. And when we meet, when we talk, it's we really enjoy each other's.
And your personal experience, is it going up or down?
Absolutely going up, for sure.
It is. How about some of the other? We have several former Rumsfelders in the room. Down here, for you're never a former, by the way. We have annual reunions.
Yeah, it's like KGB agents, right? I would like to be optimistic, but I think that when we talk about Tajikistan and Kyrgyzstan, for them, it's more like Central Asia is another opportunity. We're talking about big countries, and I don't really share what Umit has just said, that for Kazakhstan, Uzbekistan, it can be quite a different story. Because if you take a look at the Uzbek case, Uzbekistan prefers to engage in bilateral relations. Yes, it's a member of many international organizations, but when it comes to some strategic decisions, it prefers to go to bilateral relations. And one of the examples is China, which learned this lesson, and they went all the way, not discussing the pipeline separately with together with Turkmenistan, Uzbekistan, Kazakhstan. They just said, okay, we're going to like discuss this on a bilateral level with all these countries, and they actually completely succeeded. So this is the issue that they learned their lesson, and for example, for these countries, I don't think that it's not as harsh as in Caucasus, as Zara mentioned, but I think that it's not going up.
Any further thoughts on this? This is a crucial question. Well, it's 4 minutes up. If there are any final questions or comments, the floor is open. If not, let me... yes, please, sir.
I wonder if the panelists can comment as to whether they sense that American influence in the region has diminished considerably, or whether it's sustained by ongoing economic interests. Have they sensed in their meetings here in Washington a high level of interest on the part of their interlocutors, awareness of the region, of the issues? Have they made time for it?
Any of you?
Yeah. If I may, absolutely, the city is not like any other city. The people are very well informed. They know what Kyrgyzstan or Kyrgyz Republic is. But when it comes to U.S., your perception of U.S. in the region, it's absolutely diminished. Because if you see, first of all, it's very natural geographically. We are very far away from each other. We don't do that much trade, except like investment in oil and gas deposits in some of the countries. We are not natural trade partners. That's first. Secondly, investments. U.S. has been very picky in terms of investing money because you put a lot of here companies, and U.S. government tends to put a lot of conditionality, and that really upsets a lot of leaders who are also very, I mean, they like to feel confident about themselves. Whereas that vacuum has been filled up by Russian and Chinese investors. They don't ask too many questions. They don't require much. They come in. They build infrastructure. They just do their job, you know. And in this regard, my sense is that U.S. is not really interested in the region. It's not a strategic of interest. Before, probably it was because of Afghanistan, I believe, and situation there. But I don't think the region also is very well aware of that. U.S. is not a partner, although we wish that U.S. pay more attention to the region to balance our foreign policies, and whenever necessary, we could have some kind of leeway in certain decisions. But the reality is that that's not the case. And
would any of the fellows care to add or differ?
For Mongolia's case, I would have to say that unfortunately, U.S. interest seems to be diminishing in our country, and it's I think as a Mongolian a very scary thing because we're, as I mentioned before, democracy and seen as a beacon of democracy in the region. 25 years ago, when we made the transition, one of the main factors for becoming a democracy was not. It's kind of weird to say, but not really because we believed in the ideals of democracy, but purely because we wanted to, you know, remain independent and to keep our sovereignty. And we saw that by becoming a democracy and establishing closer ties with other democracies was the best option for us. And, you know, Mongolia has always extended our kind of hand towards the Western democracies, and unfortunately, I don't see a lot of kind of interest from this side, especially lately. And I would wish that it's not just the commercial interest, not just the investors and the mining companies taking an interest in our countries, but also just, you know, regular people and academics and people who, you know, want to see kind of democracy kind of flourish in the region.
Thank you very much. I dispute whether academics are regular people, but that's a detail. Yes, please.
A couple. There are, of course, many good stories, bad stories about relation, but what's expectation is? First is Central Asia, and I hope forever, will try to keep this balanced approach toward the major powers, including the United States. There are many things which you can be learned or share with each other. We were in Riverside in California, and there was only two official visits in water district in Riverside. One was from China, second from Uzbekistan, because we're facing the same problem as water sharing in Uzbekistan particularly. So the of course expectation is try to work together in many directions, including political dialogue, of course, including sharing technological. And I'm, as a person from academic background, I hope it's needed extending the academic and educational partnership. I think it's important.
Thank you very much. Any final comments? Let me offer two quick notes in conclusion. One, regarding the United States and your region, if you check all, in fact, you just alluded to it, Mira, the foreign policies in Central Asia and Azerbaijan certainly added to that. And indeed of Mongolia, and Afghanistan, they all rely on a notion of balance. The way they want to, you use the term, a term that was first introduced into the discussion by Kazakhstan's foreign minister, but now it's used everywhere. And the idea is simply, as historically the way it worked, is you bring in, haul in China to balance Russia, and then you haul in the West to balance China and Russia, and maybe you add others too. But the word is balance, and that creates an expectation from within the region that is absolutely incompatible with what you have just reported, namely the disengagement of the United States. If we have time, I would want to extend that to question about Europe, as was pointed out, and I think that's correct. Europe is in fact intensified from a very low base, its official engagement, but that isn't enough to warrant it being part of the calculus in any balance. But it seems to me this is a very fundamental issue, and your governments have failed to convey this adequately. It can only be done privately, effectively in Washington, and your friends here have failed as well. I count myself among. Second point, and that is with regard to this intra-regional, the number of your emails or first-class letters or whatever, the growth of intra-regional contact and cooperation. The Rumsfeld Fellowship Program, which the Central Asia Caucasus Institute administers, has started an annual reunion of Rumsfeld Fellows, precisely for this reason. These are people who are building their countries in every case. They're people of great talent and skill. And it is extremely important that they know one another. And very interestingly, even before we had the reunions, indeed in the very first class, there were business deals being struck between guys from Tashkent and Dushanbe. Now that doesn't fit the normal picture of Uzbek-Tajik relations. It took about 24 hours for that to happen. So it seems to me that maybe however frankly unfavorable the situation has been, it seems to me those of you who have spoken about the potential in that intra-regional contact and comity are on the right track, and that it would be well to start thinking, if that does grow, what does it lead to? So with that, thank you very, very much. Come back tomorrow evening, 5:00, Kazakhstan election.